Tokyo, Australia, Germany, Africa.
Here we go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. It's Titanic Tuesday on the horn, this 16th day of August 2016. This is the horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live, and that is where you go if you would like to jump into the horn chat room and participate in the madcap, zany, merry, multimedia real-time extravaganza. That is our chat room, where you will be greeted by Hoghead, Jug of Punch, Jules, Steve from Georgistan, and capably moderated by longtime and veteran indefatigable chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third stage guild navigator, has chosen again not to fold space because, well, it's kind of hot and maybe even combustible out there right now. Thank you very kindly. Longtime veteran. Somewhat fatigable, chat room moderator Texas Betsy says, loud and clear on my abacus. Click, click, click. Labor Man has joined us. Hope you will, too. All you got to do is pick out a screen name and a password, and bang, zowie, there you are. Also at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, you will find the tab Contribute. That is how we keep this program on the air. Because we are sadly lacking in Buy Gold Now ads or ads for vacuum cleaners that pick up bowling balls off Swedish mattresses and drop them somewhere else because you're laying on the mattress as you wait for your herbal erection remedy or herbal hair regrowth tonic or maybe both to do their magic as you listen to your Bose Wave radio all sitting atop your lumber liquidator's floor inside your General Steel building. God damn. No, we survive on listener contributions here because we don't participate in those dodgy businesses. But thank you very kindly. Thank you very kindly indeed to David, and that would be David in Fredericktown, Ohio. And thank you to Reinhard, and thank you very much to Glenn, and thank you very kindly to Christopher in Washington, and Glenn in Rochester, all of whom are subscribers. And who collectively helped overnight, without even having to lift a finger, to throw a couple of shovelfuls of earth into the hole that we have dug fundraising-wise, and thereby have, we ended the program at $340 to go, at $140 to go in fundraising, which became $340. And which they then turned into 290. Ha! Yeah. Thank you very, very kindly to our subscribers. And if you'd like to become a subscriber, well, you can go to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. You can click on the Contribute tab. And you can then click on the button box there that says Make This a Recurring Monthly Donation. And just fill out the rest of the details and Well, you know how it works from there. You can leave out the part about what you do at the Schatz Beer Brewery and how much you do it for. But beyond that, just get to the next screen. If you don't want to be a subscriber, it's still cool. You can also just make a contribution. And your gift is what keeps this going. Plain and simple. Sorry, August Pollen. So there's that way. If you prefer the United States Postal Service, which many do, send me an email, bobkincaid@gmail.com, so I can tell Bossman Wayne to be on the lookout. And B, then send your check or money order, made payable to the Horn, not to Bob Kincaid, I never see him, to the Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. And that way, if you tell me and I can tell Boss Man Wayne, that means he can leave the spider-proof gloves in the truck. And, then all he has to do is take a nice length of iron galvanized pipe with him in case he runs into a Klansman there at the UPS store, where the UPS, the owner of the UPS store, is more than happy to do business with, the Klan. PMB, Hoghead asks, PMB stands for Personal Mailbox. But it'll probably confuse them if you write Personal Mailbox on the envelope. So just stick with PMB, PMB. So all of that is out of the way. It is Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. It is worth remembering that Titanic Tuesday is so named for the full speed ahead straight on into the iceberg way of right-wing thinking, occasioned many years ago now. Many years ago. John Wesley Hardin shot him. It was so mean, he once shot a man for snoring. Never mind. Many years ago on right-wing radio in America's fifth smallest radio market, Beckley, West Virginia, when our buddy Jim heard one of America's great monotones take a call. Caller, you're on the air. Steve, why is it that they is seashells in the rocks in West Virginia? We ain't nowhere near the beach. Well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates. It was there, it was real, and it remains a source of inspiration, I suppose, although there's still no word whatsoever. Yes, exactly, Steve in New York says that. Many years ago, when we wore onions on our belts, which was the style at the time. Right. No, still no word on the movement of the Titanic microplane grader. None whatsoever. Big damn table with all the stuff that's on it. Absolutely. That's Titanic Tuesday. And being Titanic Tuesday, there are a number of examples, lovely examples, of just exactly how delightful right-wing intellect can be. Yes, Jeremy in Vermont pointing out, what, no poisoned wood product advertisements? How can you be louder and clearer on TuneIn than El Rushbo? God, I heard an... I was taking the boy to work today, and I heard a snippet. I mean, it couldn't have been 30 seconds of Flush Flimball. And I just felt like I needed to come home and not shower in bleach, but like a hot tub in bleach. Disgusting. Yuck. And it's one of those reasons I buy a newspaper every day. You know that joke, right? But it's Titanic Tuesday, and sometimes, well, sometimes Titanic right-wing intellects aren't necessarily always Republicans. You might recall despite years and years and years of happy, you know, successful operation of the national parks by the federal government of the United States, that somewhere along the way, the Kenyan Muslim usurper who has yet still not succeeded in taking away everybody's guns, but somewhere along the way did in fact succeed in signing an administrative rule into law, or into, you know, ruleness, that allowed the carrying of firearms in the national parks. Now, this may or not be a case of that, but nonetheless, it fits nicely into Titanic Tuesday, because nothing says freedom like taking a personal sidearm into a national park. And not just any national park, but particularly into one of the most iconic buildings of any of our national parks, the Old Faithful Lodge in Yellowstone National Park, where last week they had to go on an active shooter alert, which is kind of a 21st century thing, isn't it? Or maybe a 1990s to 21st century thing. When did that phrase enter the lexicon? Active shooter alert. And as practitioners of the art of word knowing, what precisely does it mean? For every reaction, there's an equal and opposite reaction, right? Everything has its opposite. So, if there are such things as active shooter alerts, what constitutes a passive shooter alert? Oh, don't make me do it. I mean, I've got a gun. Feeling kind of homicidal. Just really don't have the desire to pull it out and blow anybody away today. Well, see, Steve was right there with me. Even as I was saying, Steve in New York beat the internet latency. He's hearing what I just said a minute ago right now, but he'd already emailed and said, what exactly would a passive shooter alert look like? And I think I just covered that. But just the same, this past Wednesday, a week ago tomorrow, the Old Faithful Lodge at Yellowstone National Park got locked down and put on active... Wait, I think we need effects for this. Active shooter alert. Does sound much more authoritarian that way, doesn't it? Okay. Well, that's another way of looking at it, Steve. Okay. I'll buy into that. A passive shooter alert is what happens when the gun just went off. A maintenance worker there at the Yellowstone Lodge reported a gunshot a single gunshot, to law enforcement. The law enforcement then went into the men's room and cleared the men's room. Clear! I got you covered. Clear! And everybody had to get away from the front of the building, too. Oh, okay, that too. The somewhat fatigable Texas Betsy said, an active shooter gets up from his desk for 5 minutes every hour and does cardio 2 times a week. Yeah, okay. But so they cleared the building, they cleared the outside area of the building, but not to worry. It's not like there was a crazed member of ISIS out there, hell bent on destroying, on destroying Old Faithful nor nothing. No. According to Charissa Reed, a spokesperson for the park, after the gunshot was reported, and after law enforcement cleared the restroom and the exterior of the building, the all clear was given. Because law enforcement discovered that a senior, and this is how it got written up, a senior official from the Virginia governor's office was in the restroom with an 8-year-old boy. And it turned out that a man using a stall toilet had a Freedom Protector in his shoulder holster. And it fell out and accidentally discharged. In other words, as Steve from New York prophetically predicted, the gun just went off. Because it fell out of his shoulder holster because, well, freedom. Wolverines! Because, you know, out there in the wilds of Yellowstone National Park, you never know when you're going to be right there in the restroom and the grizzly bear, the ISIS grizzly bear, the ISIS Al-Qaeda grizzly bear, the ISIS Al-Qaeda Black Lives Matter grizzly bear is going to come a-barreling through right there into the stall where you are. And then but then again, it fell out of his shoulder holster. And the gun just went off. Nobody got shot. Yay! Park rangers are investigating, according to the article. The accidental shooter fled the scene, and his identity remains unknown. One of the witnesses retrieved the shell casing in the bathroom, and on Thursday, park staff recovered the bullet from a wooden beam in the ceiling. Okay. The Bozeman, Montana Daily Chronicle reported, "People are allowed to carry guns inside Yellowstone National Park. A ban on firearms inside park boundaries was lifted in 2010. But people aren't allowed to bring guns into any of the park's buildings or any of the buildings operated by the concessionaire company, like Old Faithful Lodge. Shooting a gun inside Yellowstone National Park is illegal." I'm glad to know that shooting a gun out. But is it always illegal? I mean, this is Merca. We got freedom to defend. I mean, when that ISIS grizzly bear comes through, or that Al-Qaeda wolf, what are we supposed to do? Negotiate with it and have a liberal progressive sensitivity session with it and maybe offer it a weenie? Yeah. Meanwhile, I think we've got a thing started now. Michael in Madison says, to me, active shooter just sounds like a guy that likes to go to the range a lot. Maybe he shoots some clay pigeons and does a fair amount of hunting. Maybe he even aspires to do a biathlon. It sounds like the name of a magazine, like a lifestyle biathlon. For a minute there, I saw B-I-A-T-H-L-O-N, and damned if my brain didn't see aspires to do a bathroom. A biathroom-a-lon. That's where you accidentally discharge your freedom protector in two bathrooms, both the men's and the women's, thus inflaming the evangelical fundamentalist homosexuals all across Merca. Jim, meanwhile, says guns do not go off. People are the ones who go off. Well, no, but I mean, sometimes the gun just goes off. Gun just went off. I mean, here the person was in a shoulder holster, and it's a bit of a mystery, really, because early on in the story we have a reference to what's it say here? An 8-year-old boy and a senior official from the Virginia governor's office were in the restroom at the time of the incident, but I guess we can assume that neither of them were the shooter, because the shooter fled the scene and has not yet been apprehended. Not that there's going to be much in the way of a person hunt. But yes, this is truly a case of thanks, Obama. Because it was in 2010 when Barack Obama, you know, that gun grabber, that Kenyan Muslim usurper, stealer of all of our gun freedoms, declared that, hey, you got a gun? Take it to the national park with you. It's great family fun. Maybe you can shoot a buffalo. Or a bar. No, bars. Wait a minute. Something about that. So, anybody want to... okay, I got a little problem here. The interweb tubes have exploded in a sort of... what's the phrase I'm looking for here? An indignity hissy, an indignity hissy over an asshole, and I want to make sure that we use the right word, an asshole from Merca. By the name of Josh Bomar, who proudly posted a video on the interweb tubes of him baiting a trap for a bear in some forested area that has not burnt down of Alberta in Canada. And he had a GoPro camera or some sort attached to the to his spear. And then he impales, making him, I guess, in Romanian, a tepes. T-E-P-E-S, I don't know, an impaler. Remember, Vlad Dracul was Vlad Tepes, Vlad the Impaler. What the hell does that have to do with the story, Bob? Jesus H. Christ, get on with it. 26-year-old Josh Bomar went bar hunting in Canada, only he didn't want a bar hunt like civilized people and use a big old gun. He wanted to get his inner caveman on and spear it to death, you know, right through the gizzard. This happened a few months back, but now it's getting a little bit of attention because, among other things, the province of Alberta is considering filing charges against Bomar who videoed himself getting his kill porn on with a bear. Because, you know, this is... Look, there's all this testosterone stuff that goes on over on the right wing. All this manliness and stuff. I didn't shoot the bear. I didn't bow and arrow it either. By God, I went after it with a fucking spear. That's manly. Now, granted, he wasn't wearing like a fur loincloth or anything. He appears to be in some sort of camo, and that's a son of a bitch of a spear, too. Looks like he probably made it himself. He runs a fitness company in where else? Ohio. And was some sort of athlete in college. And he looks into the camera and says, "I drilled him perfect. That was the longest throw I ever thought I could ever make." Hot diggity damn. Now, in Alberta, you're allowed legally to hunt bear with your bow and arrow. 19% of 119,000 big game hunters in the province last year bought archery hunting permits. No word on spear hunting permits, because I don't know if that such a thing exists. Hunting license revenues for the province brought in $18.8 million Canadian dollars, or I guess somewhere around, what, 10 million Merkin ones? Josh Bomar, having been contacted by Reuters, said, "No one cares more about these animals than us hunters." Bear ran about 60 yards and then died. A spear is a more humane weapon than a bow. Is this going to be one of those art of word knowing nights? Humane? Spear? Okay, there is a long history of humans using spears on other humans. But that's human, not humane. You know, don't worry, it's not like I just got my membership card in PETA or anything. But damn. When you've run a spear through something, chucked it at him, and it went through him, the bear, her, who knows, and said bar, Davy Crockett killed a bar on this tree, Daniel Boone? Daniel Boone killed a bar on this tree in 1793, something like that. If it's you versus the bear, okay. But those are, in the 21st century on planet Earth, those are going to be fairly limited circumstances, aren't they? Where you just find yourself having to have an existential contest with a member of the ursine species. I don't know, because you can't, not when you went all the way from Ohio to freaking Alberta to find it, because you can't go spearing no bears in Ohio, because they don't have no freedom there. You know, it reminds me of the old story about the two good old boys is out in the woods a hunting of bear. And here in West Virginia, we have bear. I saw a photograph that Kelly took a couple of years ago, our buddy Kelly, and it was a photo of a bear at the edge of some woods, and as quick as it saw her, and she snapped the picture, it turned around and hightailed it away from her, because bears are kind of shy. I mean, you could say that they're sweet, and they might be, you know, if you raised it from a cub, but that's not natural.
But they will. They will try very hard to get away from you. And that's why in the state of West Virginia, for instance, it is legal to hunt bears over bait. Knew a fella used to do it. He'd fill a garbage can up with rotten everything, especially rotten berries. And the bears would come to it without fail. Anyway, these two good old boys, these two hillbillies, was out in the woods and was hunting bear. And they's all dressed for it. They had their camos on and their big old clunky Rocky brand hiking and hunting boots, and kind of heavy and such. And lo and behold, here come a mama bear, and she's right pissed. And all of a sudden, one of the two fellers sits down on a log and starts to take his big old heavy boots off. And the fella said, "Why are you taking your boots off? That ain't going to help you outrun that bear." And one hillbilly looked at his buddy and said, "I ain't got to outrun the bear. I just got to outrun you." But apparently Josh Bomar was by himself when he decided to get his, you know, Clan of the Caveman on. And I don't know, maybe this story's not interesting to you at all, but it is to me, because of this notion of how one goes about killing the bear is somehow a measure of one's civilized status. Because I can't get there. Apparently Brother Deacon Asa can't either. Brother Deacon Asa said, "I'd like to jam a spear through the little prick's scrotum. See how he likes it. A spear, after all, as he notes, is a humane weapon." No? Yes. No. No. Is there a new foodie thing out there for eating bear? The only thing I know about bear eating is that I was told once that the famed Western explorer Jesse Chisholm, blazer of the Chisholm Trail, died from eating tainted bear grease. Whoa, tainted bear. Whoa, once I ran from you. Never mind, I'm so ashamed. But that's about it. And the only reason that there is still a viable bear population is because governments like Alberta's have determined that there is some capitalism to be had in it, that there are Josh Bomars out there with guns and bows and arrows and now apparently spears who get some sort of a stiffy out of killing wild animals. I mean, the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini's git likes to go and kill animals. There was a picture of him holding up some leopard in Africa that he'd slaughtered or some such. And again, this is not the PETA portion of the program, because I'm not going to get all broke up about it. I live in a state full of hunters. I've hunted myself. I mean, I haven't hunted myself. I mean, that'd be kind of hard. I mean, they'd probably put me in the hospital. That'd be more like suicidal, wouldn't it? But really, there's a controversy because he killed the bear with a spear instead of a bow and arrow, or instead of a gun, or instead of, hey, a great big goddamn razor-toothed, massive spring-loaded jawed iron leg trap. Hey, that would have been, hey, that's humane. No! I think there's something more in the way of an analysis called for here about why humans feel the need to go out and kill stuff. Now, if you're putting meat in the freezer, okay. But how's dipshit here? I know modern technology and everything, but really, he's going to get a bear home and put into his freezer there in Buckeyestan. humans are traditionally meat eaters. I get that. And fishers of fish. And we've remarked in the past about some of the things, and you kind of wonder how it was that the first human being decided, you know what? I'm famished. I'm gonna eat that. You know, coast dwellers watching sea otters out there cracking oysters open and going, well, you know, I'm not that far from a sea otter. I guess I'll try an oyster too. Or, I mean, you know, from the vegetable standpoint, the 10,000 years of patience that it took to get from a miserable, ribby, little, measly bit of grass called teosinte up to, you call it, corn. And then, you know, genetically splicing an ocelot's, a gene from an ocelot's pancreas into it to, you know, kill a certain bug or something. That's a long trip. We're curious little primates. We really are. But that urge to just go and kill for the sake of killing, and then to turn around and say, well, you know, this is humane. And I think, because I'm a nerd and I'm a geek, and I should probably just turn the microphone off and go and read some Herodotus or something. Who was not a classical author? There's Herodotus and Thucydides. And, no, that was an elision of Herodotus. But I mean, if you know your classical history, you know what spears do, and it ain't pretty. And it was proven how unpretty it was time after time after time after time, and technology arose to make infantry fighting with spears better and better and better. I guess it was Philip II of Macedon who turned the sarissa into an 18-foot affair, which kind of gave the reach advantage to his phalanges. So I'm just kind of at a loss. As to how it is that there's an uproar in Alberta over the fact that this guy chucked a spear at a bear and that he may be criminally charged over it. Instead of doing it the right way, which would have been to use a bow and arrow. And Jesus Christ, I mean, you want to talk about nasty? You ever seen the hunting arrows? The razor blades with a point, and the compound bows that fling with, you know, hundreds of pounds of force. Or, you know, just a gun. I'm sure somewhere the NRA is incensed. The hell's wrong with him? Him coming from Merca and everything and doesn't have the common decency to use a gun. Jesus didn't give us the Second Amendment for nothing, damn it! I drilled him perfect, Bomar said. Nothing here to tell us, you know, where he drilled him, but yeah. Oh well. A Titanic intellect, you know. It just gets all the way from Ohio to Alberta to spear a bear. And the headline on the Reuters story doesn't help. Canada officials may charge U.S. hunter who speared a bear to death, which, of course, creates the mental image in your mind. Well, that's where mental images come from, isn't it? Of him standing over the bear. Which is not what he did. I mean, I don't care much for this guy. I mean, I'm guessing he's a dick. But there's something about the thought process that says that he killed the bar wrong. Well, okay, and see, the NRA would have been perfectly happy with that. Brother Deacon Gerald pointing out he should have declaimed self-defense, you know, stand your ground and all of that. Absidamtively, positamlutely. Somehow or another, though, when you get right down to it, standing your ground with 600 or 700 or 800 pounds of bear coming at you, I mean, it's not quite the same as standing your ground with a 16-year-old black kid with a can of Arizona tea and a bag of Skittles coming at you. You know, I mean, if that had been George Zimmerman, you could have trailed him by the scat leavings. Woo! Yeah. I mean, if it'll literary recommendation, go and read Hemingway's The Short Happy Life of Francis Macomber. Very, very good examination of the topic. So, so we got that for Titanic Tuesday. What else do we got for Titanic Tuesday? Okay, let's get rid of the bear. I mean, that's one of the stories where what's the approved progressive liberal position on that? Because I'm sure at some point in time this is going to turn into a thing. You know, a thing, one of those things that gets right wingers so hopelessly butthurt. Well, now, it's amazing what happens. Over in the chat room, the multimedia madcap extravaganza, real time that it is, this whole discussion has spawned a discussion of old school lunch boxes. V.T. Blum, Stockton Larry, noting, I had a Davy Crockett lunchbox. Oh, hi, Flavio. Oh, my freaking God, from Herodotus to Hemingway. Damn you, Bob! And then Steve from Georgistan, I have a Partridge Family lunchbox. Well, somewhere, I think, is my Man from U.N.C.L.E. lunchbox. And, you know, our children are missing out on so much. Well, our grandkids now. My grandkids. They've got these nylon insulated things with zippers and whatnot. And, no. I mean, those rusty metal boxes with the glass lined thermoses that shattered the first time you dropped one when with your chicken noodle soup in it or whatever. And the tetanus potential there when it rained on the way home. Yeah, absolutely. But of course, we do need to point out that it would not have been okay to shoot the bear in the restroom at the lodge at the Old Faithful Lodge. The jury is still out on Spearing. I mentioned PETA a little bit ago, and they're so far left that they've come around to, you know, they're pretty much on the right too. I mean, goddamn, they're the Pol Pot of animal lovers. Morrissey and PETA make their own Pokemon Go, but for vegans. Oh, really? Because... And it's called... And somehow I don't understand how this is particularly I don't understand how this works within the realm of Pokemon. But PETA have put out a game called Which of These Beautiful Animals Must Die. Yeah, okay. Good for you. I don't know. And when it comes to this is a celebration of right-wing intellect today, right? Yes. So off we go to Longview, Texas, where their bastion... Ah, gee, sorry, Gerald. Damn it, Bob, now I have the song Davy Crockett stuck in my head. You know the part. Killed him a bar when he was only 3. Yeah, so it was Davy Crockett. I was wondering about that. I couldn't remember if it was Davy Crockett or Dan'l Boone. The bastion of the Fourth Estate, the guardian of freedom in Longview, Texas, is the Longview News Journal. And I'm pleased to report that readers of the Longview News Journal are kind of pissed off with the newspaper. Because they recently ran a feature in the Longview News Journal, Battle Cry of Freedom, Moral Volcano, and Morning Glory of God. An above the fold spread showing, well, what else? A burning cross. Yeah. The big banner headline said, "The Klan turns 150. And the story went on to explain the birth of the Klan, the origin of the Klan, the history of the Klan, membership drives of the Klan, active KKK groups in and around East Texas. Written in, okay, like this. Born in the ashes of the smoldering South after the Civil War, the Ku Klux Klan died and was reborn. I'll add, just like Jesus, before losing the fight against civil rights in the 1960s. Losing the fight. Not taking an entirely bass-ackward, hate-filled, racist position, but losing the fight against civil rights. So the Longview moral volcano there apparently thinks that there was a struggle over who was right and who was wrong when it comes to the civil rights issue, and particularly when it comes to, you know, murdering people for wanting to express constitutional rights, have constitutional rights, or simply be alive while having a skin shade darker than white folk, pink folks. Captain, there's an iceberg up ahead. Full steam ahead, boy! So we got that. But that was 150 years ago, right? And gosh, it was the 1960s when they lost the fight against civil rights. That's all over. And not hardly. For this, we go to the Jewish Daily Forward. And a report about a pro-Trump activist named Jamie Liardi. Jamie Liardi has launched a group called Trump Youth. And as the Forward noted, its rhetoric, quote, evokes the Hitler Youth, a wing of Germany's Nazi Party. The Trump Youth website calls upon young voters to, quote, embrace your destiny and become a part of the greatest battle the world has ever seen. We millennials are destined for greatness. No longer will we sit idle and watch everything our forefathers built be turned to dust. Our world is hurting, and it is up to us, the youth, with a capital Y, you know, like you capitalize nouns in German, to become the, caps again, hero generation, and to save the non-caps world. This guy, incidentally, who looks to be wearing a brown shirt and tie, says, well, just hold on a minute here.
Our nations have been commandeered by an international criminal cartel, and this parasite is feeding on our energy. It's in Japan, it's in China, it's in Germany, it's in America. Now, if we don't throw this parasite off our backs, the world will fall into chaos. These parasites want war, they want destruction, they want slavery, and they're getting it. And unless we hold them accountable, unless we take justice into our own hands and throw these parasites off our backs, the world will come to chaos. There will be no peace if they are successful, if the globalists are successful, if this new world order comes to place. It's up to us, the millennials, the children of tomorrow, to become the hero generation and to save the world.
Trump Youth. We are the hero generation. Wait a minute, we really needed a ha at the end, didn't we? And what, he couldn't get a little bit of Wagner licensed? Holy Jesus. You know how last night I mentioned that when the Republican, now that Trump has blazed the trail into full-on fascism for the American nationalist white right wing, that when the next leader steps up, it won't be a dipshit like Trump. I mean, he sounded perfectly reasonable, too, didn't he? I mean, he didn't even say the Jews or mud people. or even use the word vermin. He leaves that up to the viewer. And Lordy, he's young and he's handsome and he's got blonde hair and just a little bit of hipster stubble. And he's got him a tan shirt and a brown tie and a blue jacket. And you know what the real fashion touch is there on the blue jacket? He's got his collar popped. Nothing says modern fascism like a popped collar on a blue sport jacket. It's coming. Oh, brothers and sisters, it's coming. And it's gonna be real. And people, aggrieved white people in this country, are going to lap it up like a kitten laps up cream. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. This is just the comedy warm-up act, Trump is. The real thing. It's in the morning. And apparently they've got... Now, will anybody join this? You know what? Some will. Or maybe some... You know how this goes. Some grandparents will email the link to their kids. Or maybe even directly to their grandkids.
Ah, this young, fine young man looks like a good, upstanding American. And maybe you ought to check out his organization.
Yeah. courtesy of our buddy Robert Up Over Down Under. Subject line, Youth of America. Bob. A message for the youth of America from the rest of the world. All caps. Please don't save us again. We're still trying to get over the last time. We're doing fine, so just go away. Oh, Robert, I don't think we're going to be able to save ourselves. Steve in New York says, you know, this sounds like one of those North Korean videos. Well, he didn't say that they are in North Korea now, did he? See how it works? Yeah. And so, here we are at the top of the hour. 58 minutes in, a minute before 7 p.m. in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. And oodles of stuff to go into. And your calls. Lines are open. Stress line is open, 304-663-4676. And I'm still putting out a call to see... Hey, Jim, in Louisiana, Stan, we need to hear from you, buddy. We need to know you're okay. 40,000 people are homeless, in case you didn't know. 40,000 homes are affected in southern Louisiana. And the effects can be felt as far over as Mississippi and Alabama. The storm system is headed toward East Texas, and that's not exactly high ground. So, Jim, we need to hear from you, buddy. Need to know you and Mama are okay. Of course, from anywhere on the planet, you can always reach the program Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N. C-A-I-D, H-O-R-N. As noted, we had a $290 fundraising goal to begin the evening. We still have a $290 fundraising goal as of right now. If nothing happens tonight, that means tomorrow's fundraising goal will be $490. Thursday's $690. And holy cow, Friday's, you know, $890. I really hope it doesn't shape up that way. But 10 at 29, 29 at 10. Don't necessarily just wait around for somebody else to do it or to put a challenge on the table. This is how this happens. And I don't like talking about it. But when you get to the end of a program, end of the first hour of the program, and it kind of puts me in that little corner. So, hang on. I'm gonna go to the phones real quick. Hey, is that you, Jim? Jim?
Yeah, you hear me?
Yeah, I got you.
Yeah, no, it's fine. In fact, about 3 months ago, two, 3 months ago, we had some rain, kind of like the unending rain syndrome, which we've kind of got now. That's kind of, it's pretty much sunny, but now it looks like it's going to rain again.
Well, I mean, down in that neck of the woods, it's not at all unusual in August to have pop-up convection thunderstorms about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. The heavens open up, it pours right down for a while, and then it all goes away, and, you know, lather, rinse, repeat the next day. But it looks like what was going on down there was pretty ugly and pretty serious. I mean, it was ugly and serious, and I was getting inquiries, hey, is Jim in Louisiana staying okay? So we got to do that kind of thing now and then.
No, I appreciate it. You know, it makes me feel more a part of the Juan Malloy Skype chat group family. The thing is, it's just a rain we had 3 months ago, so flooded a lot worse where I'm located. I guess it's kind of fairly good land, but land in that it's kind of amped. Watch me put the gree-gree on the whole area. So far, so good, you know. I mean, like I said, the weather looks like, you know, there's a 50% chance of rain for each day for the next 10. And like today, it started out pretty sunny. Looked like it was going to clear up, but it looks like it's going to rain.
I mean, it was, and the Baton Rouge area just got the hell knocked out of it, didn't it?
Yeah. Because that's been on, you know, the Chicken Noodle News and stuff. And
is anybody down there daring to say the two dirty words?
Climate change.
Yeah, those two.
I don't know. I don't really communicate that much. Yeah, when I'm out and about, or, you know, I don't really profess my enlightened views to most people because it's a waste of time. And, you know, I let them believe what they want to believe, because even if you talk to them for an hour, it's not going to change anything. I mean, I'm sure you experienced the same thing in West Virginia, you know?
Well, it is. I mean, But at some point, I mean, I just keep wondering if there's a tipping point. And maybe that's the wrong phrase, Jim, but is there some point where, well, you know, maybe there's something to this.
I don't think there is. It's like...
I mean, your new Democratic governor could never say it if he ever wants to be, a reelected Democratic governor.
Right. And actually, all things considered, from what I don't really keep up with local politics, per se, but... He actually seems a lot better than the Yahoo we had for the previous two terms. But
Hollered out, rotted stump would have been better than Piyush Jindal. I mean, that ain't a very high accolade you just offered up there.
Well, you know, if you get older, I mean, it's just like, to me, Bernie Sanders would have been a much better president than Hillary, but that's what you got. And I'm still standing by my guns. I'm voting Green Party. It doesn't matter how I vote, because Louisiana's going for Trump.
Right. You know? Now, I mean, you got some down ballot races. Maybe you can do some good there.
Yeah. up, but even then it gets, yeah, I'll definitely check into that, but I don't see any, like, you know, Bernie Sanders, like, progressives, or even, well, probably more Hillary, like, quote-unquote, progressives. But even then, I mean, that was the whole thing about the front-loading of the Southern strategy, which I don't know, how long have they been doing that, 20, 30 years, front-loading the South, which I think definitely hurts really progressive candidates because of the insane, psychopathic Southern trend, or not trend, it's been going on forever, Southern way of thinking, you know? Yeah, if only we could get back to 1859, 1855, when things were the way they were supposed to be. You know, I know, I mean, that's the way I think about it. I mean, am I off base, you think?
No, I don't think you are. But by the same token, something is better than nothing in the Deep South.
Yeah.
Or at least that's the conventional wisdom. If you've got, if you've got an upstanding Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, gun-dementalist, amosexual Democrat who will at least acknowledge that women have the right to run their own bodies, that's better than having some fire-breathing, tongue-speaking, floor-rolling, strychnine-drinking snake handler.
Like Jindal, yeah, exactly. This guy's light years better, you know. And the weird thing, I mean, I'm kind of jumping all over, but it's just like with a woman's right to choose. You know, if you made it illegal, a woman's right to choose, only the rich would have abortions, and the people who can't really even afford it. They're the ones.
Well, I mean, that's pretty much where we are now.
Yeah.
Especially in places where you've got an entire state that has one women's reproductive health clinic left in it.
That does, right? We only have one left?
The same with Mississippi, same with Alabama, probably same with Arkansas.
Yeah. Well, that's one thing about living in Louisiana. We're always 48th and 49th and the good stuff. And
you wake up every morning and say, thank God for West Virginia.
First, second, and third and the bad stuff. You know, it's just like we wear that with a, you know, it's a proud badge of honor.
Well, I mean, you got a lot. I mean, Louisiana is a very pious place. West Virginia is a very pious place. So where does the great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky drop killer floods in 2016? On the places where people love him the most.
Well, Bobby's only testing our faith. You know that.
Right. And, you know, calling a few folks home. We're just glad you didn't get called home, nor mama.
Well, yeah, that's the weird thing about, you know, those true believers and stuff like that. If heaven's so goddamn great, then, you know,
giddy up.
Go off and die and go up to your eternal reward, you know. But, you know, you're talking to a hardcore atheist here.
Well, I want you to know that y'all got work to do down in Louisiana, Stan. I'm looking at the 538 nowcast, and if the election were held today, according to Nate Silver, Hillary Clinton would have a 7% chance of winning Louisiana if it was held today.
She's got what kind of percentage?
7.
Yeah, I go along with that. That's just like...
No, but see, you're not trying. Because if the election if the election were held today, Jim, in West Virginia, she'd only have a 2.9% chance. You've got some you've got some catching up to do. You got to get them... them upstanding, God-fearing, Bible-believing, gun-dementalist, amosexuals on the ball, because they're not walking hard enough on their knuckles. I mean, they're chasing us. She's only got a 2.9% chance here. Y'all have given her 7% chance. Damn.
Well, being a Green Party activist like I am.
You know what? You're probably why she has that 7% chance, Jim.
You know, Bob, I've tried to look and try and see voting for her. And I there's a couple of things I don't like the Machiavellian, the monarchy aspect of the whole Clinton clan.
Machiavellian better because, you know, I think she would do anything to be elected. It's the It's the only reason she continues to breathe out and breathe in again. She wants to be the president. This country has never before seen such a case of overriding, untrammeled ambition as what she has.
You know, it'd be funny if, like, she got elected and died the next day, and then the theme song could be, isn't it ironic, you know?
I understand you're speaking satirically and sarcastically.
Yeah. Satirically and...
because it wouldn't be funny, it would be ironic.
Yeah, isn't it ironic, like the song says, you know?
Although Tim Kaine might be sitting there singing, wouldn't it be lovely? No, never mind.
Well, that's the other thing. Like, her VP choice is just horrendous, you know? I mean, I knew there was no way Bernie would be the VP.
Gotta love a Democrat who loves him some right to work.
Well, I mean, 50% of all states now right to work and 50 aren't, and it seems to be the trend. And it's just like, man, that's just crazy. It's right to work for less, as you said numerous times. But, you know, you can't, people believe what they want to believe. They just keep, it's just like with the coal mine. We're just going to get a job in the coal mine in the oil industry down here. Oh, the oil industry is just great. You know, if you got a job, you can do pretty well. But you're screwing up the environment, and who knows when the next spill's coming.
Or where you are, the chemical industry.
Well, they've got the cancer area not too far from here, from New Orleans to Baton Rouge, which has an extremely high rate of cancer.
There's a reason for that.
You think it could have something to do with the technology at any cost?
Well, or better, no, it has to do with capitalism because money. Not to mention, better living through chemistry.
Yeah, well, to me that's one and the same. Yeah, maybe I just simplified things in my down southern sort of way of thinking. But then, you know, it's weird. You go around the country, you're going to have a hard time finding a really pristine area because they're just invading everywhere. I mean, Colorado, Nevada, I mean... Nevada was where they were, or still are, dumping the nuclear waste, which they've never, I know some people say something to the effect that can be recycled or something. I don't know how. And, you know, where are you going to put it? It's just common sense. And then it's just like when I was in Nevada a couple months ago, shortly after I left, they started if you have like solar panels on your house, they started taxing that or something, hitting you with that, because the energy, quote unquote, energy company, is losing money because you're not using their product. It's just like the new bill that a lot of the Democrats want to pass, where you basically give control of society over to corporations, where if they don't make a certain amount of money from a certain act, from a given project, they sue the state, right? Or what's that called? That's in fact, it's the thing Obama's trying to pass to be part of his legacy. I can't think of it. You know what it is, Bob. You know what I'm talking about. Where it's the big trade agreement.
TPP, yeah.
Yeah, TPP. I'd like to get a business like that where, let's say I scraped up a couple $1,000 and I expect to make X amount, and then if I don't, then I just turn around and sue the state because they were interfering with my free enterprise. I mean, that's basically what TPP is.
It's a beautiful dodge if that's how it works out. See, there are multiple layers of, it's an onion here. There's multiple layers of problems with the TPP. But at its core, the economic motivation for it, i.e. for a bunch of countries to band together to have greater economic, force in the face of the Chinese economy, well, you can almost understand wanting to have something like that.
Yeah, but they,
the problem, Jim, is that they then said, okay, let's let all the oligarchs write the agreement.
Bingo, exactly.
And they and instead of trying to put together a multinational compact on trade, it wound up being a corporate welfare wish list.
Yeah, wet dream. I mean, it's incredible. You know, I mean, like I said, I really even haven't wasted my time talking to anybody because they wouldn't even know what I'm talking about. And there was a little family gathering just a couple of days ago, and I don't even know. I'd still say most everybody there, except maybe my youngest brother, is probably going to vote for Trump.
I mean, still, is there not? I mean, is that not cooling off a little bit, Jim?
I don't think so. It's amazing. Even when he does he almost does like a whacked out thing every day. In fact, I almost think Trump is trying to lose so Hillary can be installed. Because you've seen that picture on the internet on Twitter's and I'm sure it's on Facebook of Bill, Hillary, Trump, and I don't know if it's his present wife hanging out at some rich shindig. Unfortunately, my invitation was lost in the mail, and I hate when that happens. But it seems to be a recurring thing. I think maybe I should stop hoping and praying for an invite. I don't think that's going to come through. You think maybe if like Trump gets elected, I could go? I'll be invited to the inauguration.
I can't see why you wouldn't be.
I'm just thinking two chances, slim and none, and slim's left town.
Yeah, on a lame horse for Texas, exactly. Hey, Jim, buddy, I'm not blowing smoke at you. I'm glad to know you're okay.
Sure.
You know, this isn't a family of 5 million or anything like the dead from the neck ups who listen to Flimball or whatever. But it is a family. It is a congregation. It is a commune. And, you know, we fret. We worry. And, you got to check in.
I do. I was going to talk to you just a week or two ago, Carol in Vegas. I still keep in touch with him. And he would in touch with you. Let me tell you this. I have trouble with getting you. I mean, I get your show on the internet, but as far as like getting into the chat room, I can't. I don't know what the hell's wrong. I'll try and figure it out with my freaking computer. I mean, it's just certain sort of.
It's a Java thing. I just had an email from Don, who's on a Linux machine and wants help getting into the chat room. So it's hard to say. I just know that I am no help.
Whereas with Malloy, I can get in the chat room.
Because it's not Java based.
Debbie's computer it's just those damn corporations. Or maybe if we just lowered our standards as human beings and realized that the machines are the ones we're just really here.
Well, like I said last night, I was kind of creeped out because I saw a video of a next generation robot and it looked a lot like Hillary Clinton. Only it had more personality.
What's the line from the Emerson, Lincoln, Palmer, and so on? And now you're magnetic.
I thought you were going to say, "Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside."
Well, that. But I think that I realized it was Moody Blues. You're magnetic ink. No, I'm not. I'm more than that. I know I am. At least. I think I must be in the name.
Exactly. Well, Jim, you take care. We will talk soon. And just remember, folks out here are worried about you.
All right. Well, I worry about everybody else. You know, it's just like I haven't heard from what's his name in Colorado in a while.
Oh, Kevin. Yeah, Kevin.
I forget who it was, but it used to be like a fairly regular installation. It's just I haven't heard from him. So, I mean, not it personally, but just over the air. So, all right, I'm gonna let you go.
All right, take it easy, Jim. We'll talk later. Bye now. And thus the worries of a number of members of the Horn Family Community Congregation have been allayed. In fact, Jennifer in Australia said, "Phew, Jim called." Moran Monday kind of unsettled me. One, no word from Jim in Louisiana Stan. Two, Scott's proposition that activists build a central donation hub for building media pushback. At first, I was piqued, but pondered the idea and thought, wait, has it come to this? We have to buy back our representative government. Gulp. That's Scott. Scott in Kentucky Stan. Then three, Punky Bird Scott saying how interesting this election cycle has been, invoking the May You Live in Interesting Times curse, emphasized by four, Carol Baker's hopefully prescient comment that Hillary is not winning, rather Drumpf is tanking. Gulp. Then five, you nailing it with your theory, the orange stink bug is a stalking horse, the GOP is reinventing itself, foreshadowing the odious can of worms, Tom Cotton, who, from the instant I saw him, caused my blood to run cold. Then the hairs on my arms and back stood up, and a shudder ran down my spine when I read the text of his treasonous letter to Iran. So, in a mood, I drove reticently back to the shopping center where there's a guy from New York who owns a shoe repair business. I was finally able to have a word about registering to vote. The encounter was disturbing. Quick version. I can't be bothered. Hell, let Trump have it. He was good for New York. What? The ass-mouthed braggart? He said, it's such impolite crudeness that's turning him off. Oh, okay, I thought. Is he listening to Trump? But begged off, promising from now on to be more polite. How about sphincter face? I think we're going to have to be working on the polite thing some more, Jim. The Democrats abroad primary voted for Bernie by nearly 80%. Who needs him? Thus, I was sad this morning, so please tell Jim I'm bigly relieved he called in. I really, really needed to hear his voice. Thank you, Jim. Thank you very kindly. Let's see. Someone just said in the chat room that Jim was thinking of In the Beginning. And I guess that's a possibility, yeah. Speaking of Colorado and Hillary, Jack in Shreveport writes, Ken Salazar, nice job appointing him to your transition team, Hillary. SMH. Yeah, I know. So, hey, 23 minutes, almost halfway through this Titanic Tuesday. We're still at zero for fundraising. Oh, well, let's take a break. Green News Report is on its way. And after that, your calls, 304-663-4676. The stress line is open. I think we got Flavio on hold over on 8178. We'll see how that all plays out. This is listener supported, I hope, Conversation Radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Explain to y'all before, I ain't no drinking man. I tried it once and it got me highly irregular, and I swore I'd never do it again. For I promised my brother-in-law that I'd go up and watch his still while he went into town to vote. He's right up on the mountain where the map said it would be. Friends, let me tell you one thing, though, it wasn't no ordinary still. It stood up on that mountainside like a huge golden oak. God's yellow moon was shining on the cool, clear evening. God's little lanterns are twinkling on and off in the heavens. And like I explained to you once before, I ain't no drinking man. But the temptation got the best of me, and I took a slash. Whoa. That yellow whiskey running down my throat like honeydew vine water, and I took another slash. Took another and another and another. Before you knew it, I'd down one whole jug of that shit, commenced to get hot flashes. Goose pimples was running up and down my body, and a feeling came over me like something I'd never experienced before. Like I was in love. I may have a little love, might. In love for the first time. With anything that moved. Animate, inanimate, it didn't matter. It's like there's a great neon sign flashing on and off of my brain saying, Jimmy Buffett, there's a great day a coming. 'Cause I was drunk. I wasn't a knee crawler, slip slide, Reggie junging, commode hugging drunk. I was God's own drunk, a fearless man. And that's when I first saw the bear. He was a Kodiak looking fella about 19 feet tall. He rambled up over here, expecting me to do one of two things. Flip or fly, I didn't do either one. I hung him up. He starts sniffing around my body, trying to smell fear. But he ain't gonna smell no fear, because I'm God's own drunk and a fearless man. It hung him up. He looked me right in my eyes, and my eyes was a lot redder than his was. It hung him up. So I approached him, I said, Mr. Bear, I love every hair on your 27-acre body. I know you got a lot of friends over there on the other side of the hill. There's old Rare Bear, Tall Bear, Pretty Bear, Kelly Bear, Really Bear, Smell of the Bear, Smokey the Bear, Pokey the Bear. I want you to go back over there tonight and tell them I'm feeling right. You tell them I love each and every one of them like a brother and a sister. But if they give me any trouble tonight, I'm gonna run every goddamn one of them off the hill.
It's Tuesday, August 16, 2016.
A catastrophic situation across southern Louisiana.
Another historic, deadly rainfall event hits the U.S., this time in Louisiana.
This continues to be the epicenter of fire activity the past 2 years with these drought conditions.
Another wildfire in California forces 4,000 to evacuate. July 2016 was the hottest month ever recorded. Plus,
I would create a Green New Deal that also solves the emergency of climate change.
Dr. Jill Stein is now officially the Green Party's nominee for president. We'll tell you her position on climate change.
She's against it?
Yes.
All of those surprises and more straight ahead. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
I said, keep the oil. Keep the oil. Keep the oil. Don't let somebody else get it.
Well, you certainly don't get it, Mr. Trump. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, Jill Stein of the Green Party has been the presumptive nominee for so long that when she actually became the nominee last week, we sort of failed to take notice here in the Green News Report.
Yes, my apologies for that, but we will rectify that shortly.
Very good.
But first, another record extreme rainfall event has hit the U.S., this time in Louisiana. Over the weekend, intense storms dumped nearly 2 feet of rain in just 24 hours in some areas. 11 rivers shattered all-time flood records. 7 people are confirmed dead so far. More than 20,000 water rescues and some 10,000 people now housed in shelters. Motorists were trapped on a stretch of interstate for nearly 24 hours, and even the governor's mansion was evacuated. Louisiana Governor John Bel Edwards asked residents to heed evacuation orders in this unprecedented disaster.
Because these are record floods, we don't, this is unprecedented, so we don't have records that we can go back and see who all is going to be impacted.
Governor Edwards and President Obama have both issued disaster declarations. This is the third flood disaster in Louisiana since March. It's the 8th extreme rainfall event in the U.S. just this year alone.
A lot of extreme, historic, unprecedented weather disasters going on lately for some odd reason.
Yeah, you noticed that?
I do, but a lot of Americans don't because, frankly, the corporate media barely covers it and certainly doesn't connect the climate change dots. So thank you for doing so.
Well, it's the opposite situation in drought-stricken California, where a new out-of-control wildfire in rural Lake County, north of San Francisco, has forced 4,000 to evacuate, destroyed more than 175 structures, and it's the fourth major fire to hit Lake County in the last 2 years. It has residents asking if this is their new normal. 7,000 firefighters are now battling 11 major fires in California after 5 years of historic drought and a string of record-breaking heat waves since March. Meanwhile, July 2016 wasn't just hot, it was the hottest month ever recorded in human history. According to data released by NASA this week, July 2016 was the hottest month for the planet since instrumental records began in 1880. Overall, NASA found global average surface temperatures during July hit 1.5 degrees Fahrenheit above the 20th century average, beating all previous Julys, meaning 2016 is virtually guaranteed to be the third year in a row of the hottest year on record.
So July was not just the hottest July ever recorded, it was the hottest month ever recorded on planet Earth.
Yep.
Okay.
Finally, the Green Party has officially nominated Dr. Jill Stein as its presidential candidate for the 2016 election.
Well, thanks for letting us know.
You're welcome. We've been reporting on each party nominee's position on climate change, and Dr. Stein not only accepts the science, but she has a detailed plan to deal with it. She's the only one whose policies and rhetoric match the scale and magnitude of the task of solving climate change. In an interview with CNBC, Stein called for a wartime level of mobilization on climate change, creating jobs through massive expansion of renewable energy infrastructure.
We need an emergency jobs program like the New Deal that got us out of the Great Depression. I would create a Green New Deal that also solves the emergency of climate change.
Her platform calls for an ambitious goal to transition to 100% renewable energy by 2030, ending all fossil fuel extraction, building renewable energy infrastructure by investing in public transit, sustainable agriculture, and conservation. She also calls for labeling GMOs and putting a moratorium on GMOs and pesticides until they're proven safe. Now, her plans would be paid for, in part, by ending wars for oil and by savings in public health costs caused by pollution. Now, it's hard to say for sure if her numbers add up because we're talking about a very complex energy system totaling trillions of dollars.
But I will say this, her rhetoric about taking this on as a wartime effort is absolutely right. And I'd like to hear that from the other candidates as well. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes. Find us and follow us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
It's not that easy. Being green, having to spend each day the color of the leaves, when I think it could be so much.
Kind of saw that bumper coming from a mile away, but it's a nice idea. Climate change, treat it as a an existential catastrophe on a global level, requiring the level of commitment one would ordinarily require to, you know, wage a world war. Mm-hmm. And wow, can you know, I've often said there will be no revolution as long as the cable stays on. Can you imagine an immediate cessation? And that's not necessarily what her plan calls for. But can you imagine an immediate cessation to the usage of fossil fuels in the United States of America? Yeah, maybe the cable would stay on and people would... No, that, yeah, that's about the last time I remember the people of the United States getting real, real kind of hot under the collar and bothered. The Arab oil embargoes of the 1970s. Yes, indeedy. We'll probably eventually have that. It won't be something that we have because we've thought it through and tried to do it in a rational fashion. It'll just be what happens when the well runs dry, and we have to get all junk sick, and go through that hell and damnation and misery, trying to get well. So let's run over to line one and talk to Flavio. Hey, Flavio.
Hey.
How are you?
I'm well. I'm still trying to recover from Plutarch to Pluto. You just went from Herodotus to Hemingway and Plutarch to Pluto, and I was at a loss. Okay, public service announcement. Please send donations to care of The Horn, HORN, Head On Radio Network, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB, that's private mailbox.
Personal.
318 Beckley, that's Beckley. West Virginia, WV25801. I'm sending you a 20. It's what I can afford, but it's worth it.
Thank you. Thank you for being first through the first past the post on this evening. Thank you, Flavio.
Send donations to The Horn, HORN, Head On Radio Network. 1038 North Eisenhower Drive.
Or simply use the PayPal button.
Or the PayPal button, PMB 318 Beckley, West Virginia 25801.
It almost sounds like you've got that memorized.
I got to memorize it. But you were talking about the KKK. And I mean, there's so much there. There's so much there. I can't even begin. I mean, it's just... Okay, so the Civil War ended. And so where did all the Confederates go? They went to my state, São Paulo, Brazil. Okay? They founded a city that to this day exists. Can you guess the name?
I won't. You must simply tell me.
Americana.
Oh, dear.
Americana.
Not Confederal?
No, they called it Americana. And Brazil did not, unlike the United States, I guess. When did slavery end here?
With the passage of the 13th Amendment. By the Civil War's end in 1865, that was the end of slavery.
Yeah, in Brazil, slavery did not end until 1888. So you got these Americans, okay, going to Brazil to found a new Jerusalem? I don't even know where to begin. Help me out.
A new slave driven Jerusalem.
A new Canaan?
Brazilabama?
Brazilabama.
Brazilicippi?
Brazilicippi.
Mississippi.
And this city still exists. And one of our most wonderful singers, she's really wonderful. She's really hip. She's not at all racist or sexist or anything like that. Rita Lee. Okay?
Okay.
She's a descendant of the settlers of Americana in São Paulo, Brazil. And she's a beautiful redhead. She could be my mama. She's like 70, but beautiful as all get up, and her voice is just so lovely.
Well, now you've got me all curious. I've run over to Google Earth to find Americana, Brazil.
I try to make it interesting, you know. I mean, I'm not, you know, but so they exported that, and they tried to carry on slavery in Brazil. These Americans, these Confederates, they actually fled, F-L-E-D, fled the U.S. Civil War because they didn't want to participate in the fratricide, right? So they went to Brazil, and they founded, you know, coffee plantations, sugarcane, you name it.
Yeah, Wikipedia says, after 1866, several Confederate refugees from the American Civil War settled in the region. Following the Civil War, slavery was abolished in the United States. In Brazil, however, slavery was still legal, making it a particularly attractive location for former Confederates.
Exactly. Exactly. So, to this day, this city still exists. I mean, it's not anything like that, but it's like, our histories are so intertwined. It's scary. No?
Well, the disease, you know, the South had full on plans for the entire after they won the war and became their own separate nation, they were going to invade Cuba and Mexico and the entirety of Central America. And then they were going to engage in the conquest of South America.
If you go back
to the Monroe Doctrine, which I remember
America
being
America for the Americans.
Well, yeah, I remember being taught about it in school, Flavio, as being this groundbreaking foreign policy doctrine that said, you know, the United States is so benevolent toward all the other countries in this hemisphere that we will not allow any other country to meddle in the blah, 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 blah. Now, what we were really saying is, this is ours.
Exactly. Europe, stay out.
there's always been a desire, deep-seated. I mean, if you go back to, and I find this particular this particular aspect of American history, this era of American history fascinating, because it presages just about everything that comes after it. With the arrival of the Jefferson presidency, there was one a day.
May I interrupt you?
There was one, not yet. There was was one a day.
Thank you.
Of
Bill O'Brien.
Of conspiracies as to which country to invade and take over in the benign name of the United States. The most famous one winds up being Aaron Burr. But Andrew Jackson originally kind of halfway signed on to Burr's plan. So messing around in the rest of the Americas has long been one of those little parlor games that we badly wanted to play in.
May I interrupt?
No, go ahead now.
I wanted to give a shout out to Dr. Bill O'Brien. I am addicted to this podcast. He is awesome.
Oh, he is.
He is friggin' awesome.
There is more to be learned in Dr. Bill's broadcast than any other broadcast taking place at that time of day in the entire United States, period, as
universe.
You know, bar none.
Universe. I mean, I'm always complaining. Maybe with a full stomach because I live here, and but still, I still think that what gets promoted, what gets shot up, pushed up, is crap. I mean, we don't. I mean, not even in Brazil do we have, except if you know where to go. I mean, not even in Brazil do you have good history sites. I'm always amazed about the internet and how much we have nowadays that we didn't have when I was growing up. But if you don't know how to use it, you lose it. You know, it's like use it or lose it. And that's the way it is. But no, I was going back to Americana, the city in my state. They tried to set up a new slave republic. Like, do you remember Walker in Nicaragua?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
William Walker. Yeah, he's probably a descendant from of our governor in Wisconsin. William Walker. Jesus, what a piece of work. And you know how he died?
No.
Firing squad.
Couldn't happen to a nicer guy.
Couldn't happen to a nicer guy. Oh, my God. No, but I just thought I'd mention that. Kiddos, there's a lot there on the internet. And when I grew up, when I was coming of age, all I had was a Panasonic's double super heterodyne shortwave radio. I did not have the internet. We did not have the internet. And I had 60 feet of copper wire outside in my backyard so I could listen to broadcasts from all over the world. I would issue reception reports. Those are called QSL. You filled out a card, and then I would get like all kinds of stuff from all over the world, like a decal of a panda from Radio Beijing, China.
Nice.
Oh,
you remind me of a friend of mine. He has now since gone to his long home, but he used to use the barbed wire fencing as a great big AM radio antenna for his early broadcast efforts.
Yeah, I don't like those.
And he would, I mean, he was just a kid, and he would.
No, I don't like those because I actually they're electrified around here. And I actually leaned up against one and got thrown like 10 yards back.
No, that's not what I'm talking about. But he he had the early broadcast bug and went on to be the booth announcer for, WLW Cincinnati at one point in time. And like I said, he's since passed away. But he had this beautiful announce booth.
Because I was up there at the Bluffs in La Crosse, Wisconsin. And I was with a friend of mine, and I was admiring these horses because they raise horses around here. And I thought I'd lean up against the fence, and I caught the naked end of the wire. And I was like, I thought I was going to die. I actually did. I was like, whoa, what happened? I got thrown like so many.
Well, all that happened down here is that he would broadcast the he'd broadcast the local news and the special grocery store prices. You know, green beans, 9 cents a can. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. So anyway, they tried to set up a new slave republic, just like they did in Nicaragua. With William Walker, but it didn't work, and because, you know, the abolishment of slavery in 1888 and everything, they had to integrate. But to this day, it's interesting that in Americana, in my home state of São Paulo, they still speak English at home, but they speak Portuguese abroad.
you would have had such a hoot watching a bunch of little rednecks learning, because I still remember sixth grade. You know, our American, the lesson was something like our American friends.
Oh, and, yes, and, I remember
and,
that. I remember
and,
that
and hearing,
too.
And you know, bunch of little baby rednecks. Sao Paulo. That's hillbilly, but Sao Paulo. And that's about a million miles away from what you just said, Flavia.
No, you're right. I mean, I remember that. What was that series? Was that a World Book series?
Or? I don't remember, but I mean, there was lots of geographical learning and we learned about, but you know what? That was a step forward, Flavio. It was an attempt.
No, that was.
It
that
was
really
an attempt
was.
To make. It was an attempt to make little American children.
The Alliance for Progress.
Well, it was an attempt to make little American children see the world as or see themselves as part of a larger world, you know, outside the very limited surroundings in which we lived, because there were a lot of people from all over the world coming into the place where I grew up. And so we tried to be a little more cosmopolitan about it. And
that was a good thing.
But we only got the good side of it. And just now, Flavio, even just now, calling up Google Earth and just looking at well, drilling down to Americana, but looking at Greater Brazil, something dawned on me. And I don't know how much, I'm sure they haven't talked about this over on NBC during the Olympics, but one, and this is an understatement, it's a huge country. And it really does go to show the influence that the Portuguese crown had over the papacy during a certain period of time in, say, the early 16th century. Because Brazil becomes Brazil because of the line of demarcation. And we learned about that, too.
The Treaty of Tordesillas.
And so if you look at Brazil,
370 leagues west of the Azores.
Exactly.
Everything west of that would belong to Spain. Everything east of that would belong to Portugal.
And somehow it didn't quite work out that way.
Nah, not really.
Because, but anyway, if you look at North America, and I include, you know, Canada in this, you know, we're pretty much used up. I mean, not so much Canada as the United States, but certainly the United States. Mexico has been exploited all to hell. But there is so much, and I want to make sure that I say this correctly. There's so much Brazil that capitalism doesn't even understand what it hasn't stolen yet. I mean, the capitalists are just sitting there in Brazil going, God only knows what's out there. Let's go look.
No, it's scary. I mean,
And please, I mean, Jesus, don't let us run into some tribe of natives that's going to get in our way, or maybe we'll get to exterminate them while nobody's looking.
Oh, it goes on and on. I mean, I can't even begin. I mean, one of my favorite musicians, for all his faults and everything, is Sting of the Police. And you know, he at one point was an environmentalist. I don't know how much he is. I think he still is. He's a vegan, but he was in Brazil in the 80s or 90s or whatever. And they were so mean to him, you know, because he was advocating for the rights of the Indians and you know, he was speaking out as a public figure, you know. And they called him that little blonde fag. Yeah, he's Catholic. He's got like 6 kids. And they called him the little blonde fag. It just blows my mind. We are terrible. We are horrible in Brazil.
But I mean, this is Brazil's century.
Come again?
This is Brazil's century, Flavio. This is the century in which we're going to find out, you know, how much is there to steal.
What I'm saying, what I'm driving at, is that, and most of my countrymen, women, don't want to own up to that, but we're just every bit as racist, sexist, homophobic as the United States. We best you, actually. I mean,
well, to be honest, though, the Iberians introduced the whole idea of corruption of the blood, whether it be Portuguese or Spaniards. They invented the idea of quatroons and octoroons and
yeah, absolutely. Oh, way go! Oh, you go, girlfriend. I mean, boyfriend.
Whatever floats your boat, Flavio.
That's awesome. That no, go. You go there. Quatroons, quarteroons. Yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah, and it was a way of. It was a means of excluding what was rapidly, because the first thing that the Spaniards and Portuguese figured out when they got to the New World was that they were not going to stop good God fearing Catholic conquistadores from raping the locals, and this meant that there was going to be a population of not Spaniards. Not Portuguese, but criollos, who were probably going to become demographically dominant a whole lot faster than they could ship puros across the Atlantic. And so this exclusionary concept of, well, I'm sorry, and you know, it creeps up into North America, and it finds its way into the South, and it becomes the one drop rule.
One drop rule. Yep. Right there.
And there's a certain irony in that the Spanish and Portuguese were bloodthirsty.
Horrible.
They were murderous. They were rapacious in the truest sense of the word. And yet it turns out that the English and the Dutch wind up being much better practitioners of genocide.
Well, I don't know. I don't know.
And you know, their offspring, the Americans. Well, I mean, there's a much higher population. I mean, there's still a million people in Mexico who speak the same language that Moctezuma spoke. And there are still pockets, substantial pockets of speakers of Otomi?
Guarani?
Quiche? And
Guarani,
so,
Guarani in Brazil.
Yeah. And so...
no, but I was thinking of that, you know, it's just like the one drop rule and the gradations, all that. And I'm a first generation Portuguese in the Americas. My mother was born in Porto. My grandmother was born in Lisbon. I'm basically a white guy in Brazil. It's horrible. But yeah, the racism in that country is so intense. And, you know, under the dictatorship from 1964 to 1985, the military promoted a myth that Brazil was somehow a racial paradise. You know, just because Pelé could, you know, bet a blonde. I'm like, really?
Well,
I have family.
Yeah,
I
but see, that's proof of progress, right?
Oh God, Jesus.
And no, that, but Flavio, that's one of the problems we face moving into the 21st century, is that we look at some things and we say, well, this is proof we're moving forward, when what it is, it's proof that that the corporate the oligarchs, the capitalists, are willing to give on certain issues because they recognize that it may even have a positive bearing on their ability to do what they really want to do, which is, you know, keep fucking the planet. So they'll give on things like marriage equality and you know, domestic partner spousal rights and recognition of the same in regard to their employees. They'll even do things like acknowledging the reality of climate change, because they have to if they want to continue to tear the living
shit
out of the planet. And
exactly.
And frankly, places like Brazil and the Peruvian jungle and Ecuador and Colombia, and then moving across the Pacific to Malaysia, places that still have substantial forests to them. Oh God, get out of the way.
Yeah, they'll make minor concessions. You know. They'll recognize same-sex couples in some cities in Brazil. Argentina, they have marriage equality there, but only some cities in Brazil. But yeah. You know, can I be profane?
I think so. So we've had enough time pass now that anybody worried about you being profane has had a chance to lower the volume or whatever. So, you know, profane away.
Okay. So here we go. If you're butt-fucking, you're not gay. But if you're the butt-fucky, you're gay.
Oh, are you talking about the prevailing attitudes and, yeah.
This is hysterical. And I'm not, I consider myself hetero, although I do have a thing for Sean Connery,
but we won't talk about it.
But I'm like,
I'll take the rapists for $1,000, Alex.
Like, okay. That is my country. In Brazil, if you are in the missionary position, you're hetero. But if you're the receiver...
Oh, but I mean, every day there's a story coming out of Brazil of some Christian with a rosary in one hand and a dead chicken in the other, who just found out that the priest has screwed 972 children while promising to raise Granny from the dead. I mean, that's just Tuesday in, you know, the province of the Rio to what the hell.
It just blows my mind. It's like, you know, I grew up with this shit. And I still have a hard time coming to grips with it. I mean, how can anyone, really? I mean, you know?
But that's anybody's country. I mean, everybody has skeletons in the closet, Flavio. God knows the United States doesn't have a closet so much as a warehouse of skeletons.
Oh, we have like U-Haul warehouses in Brazil. I mean, it's like amazing.
Yeah. Consider the Germans,
and then going back to the 20th century.
There's the Anglo
century, I should say. The thing that went on, the coup d'état, the putsch. I am a Brazilian, and I'm totally against what went on. It was totally directed by Washington. I'm sure Hillary had a hand in it, like Honduras.
At the same time, I don't know if you noticed this or not, but you know who didn't go down to the Olympics, who had said he really, really wanted to, right?
Yeah.
Barack Obama.
I blame us, because and this is going full circle. I don't know who coined this term, but they called Lula the most popular president in the world. Yeah, right. A tropical Blairist. Can you translate that?
Not really. A tropical who?
Tony Blair. Tropical Blairist.
Oh, wow, that's kind of weird. I always thought Lula was the exact opposite of a Tony Blair.
No.
I mean, all the reportage here said, you know, he's a socialist. He's a, he plays poker with Hugo Chavez.
Yeah, bullshit. He and his successor, who lacked the charisma because of Brazilian sexism and everything like that. But, yeah. Tropical Blairism. I just love that. That's just beautiful. Come on. That tropical Blairism. In other words, someone who feigns to be labor, not belabor as the verb belabor, to be of the Labor Party, but really doesn't give a shit about
anything but his own power.
No. And that's where we are in Brazil. I mean, it's like, yeah, you know, and we were exposed, so to speak, to a coup d'etat because...
The coup probably would not have happened had Brazil not been so hell-bent on getting the Olympics, because all of the allegations surrounding that led to the removal of the president had to do with dummying up the books that led back to the attempts to be, you know, ready for the Olympics.
Exactly. Abso-freaking-lutely. And that's the thing. It's like...
I mean, just based on what I've read, I think she's right. I mean, I think that it was a coup. I think it was a putsch. And that's why Obama didn't, and I mean, that's why Obama didn't go down there. He couldn't because he could not lend legitimacy to that overthrow.
No, it was definitely a coup, but we are, and I hate to say it, I'm a nationalist.
Well, the United States had to tread lightly because there are, you know, there has developed a rather deep and significant relationship between the People's Republic of China and the Brazilian government.
Yeah. But, you know, I'm a nationalist, and I love Brazil as much as I hate it. But we did ourselves in because we let it happen. The corruption in that country. I mean, you don't have to read.
Yeah, but isn't there a saying down there? He steals, but he gets things done. I mean, it's like an idiom. It's a linguistic idiom.
Yeah, that's a jeito. Yeah, no. You're right, but no. That's not a civilized country. If I have to flee the United States because of a right-wing overthrow of the government, and God knows it's on its way, but if I have to, I'm not going to go to Brazil. I'm going to go to Portugal, France, Scandinavia. Hey, I brushed up on my Swedish.
Well, I would be hopelessly lost in a place like Brazil, and yet, some of the richest people in the world call Brazil home. The man who controls the lion's share of the world's supply of beer calls Brazil home.
Yeah, like Daniel Keith Ludwig. Look that up. Yeah. The one who, the paper mill guy? Talk about West Virginia and coal mines. That guy did to the Amazon what they do to West Virginia every day.
Because capitalism.
How's that?
Because capitalism.
Because capitalism.
And people are murdered in the dark and the still of the night. Without a doubt. Hey, Flavio, it has been a lovely conversation. I appreciate it. I'm going to try to make room for anybody else that wants to jump in here and converse.
Yes, sir.
But I appreciate the input.
So, once again, send contributions to The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, private mailbox, PMB 318, Beckley, West Virginia, 2585. 01.
Thank you, Flavio. You have a good night.
Likewise.
Bye now. Our buddy Flavio. And we'll just keep it rolling. Let's see. Is that you, Tracy?
Yes.
How did I know?
It's just us. Oh, well, you know,
I magic that way.
You have this way about you that, you know, you have a way of conjuring me up. The house trick, Bob.
You know, it's muggy here in the hills and hollers, but I counted our fifth fog in August, so we know we're going to have at least five deep snows in the winter.
Yeah, well, you know what's going on. You know, listening to the Green News Report, you see what you hear about what's going on out here.
Up north of San Francisco being on fire?
And how, you know, 5 years drought, and like this past, because I've been entrenched in my house with Jan because, you know, she really can't. Today is actually like one of the first days since, because I've been running errands and I had a doctor's appointment, that I've actually left the house at any length of time. I had a friend come over and sit with Jan just to be careful. I mean, she's doing better, but, you know, we still have a puppy. And she doesn't understand you can't jump on mommy.
No, but that was my first concern, was to ask how Jan's doing.
Yeah, she's doing much better. She's been having some little crying jags, you know, going, I'm so helpless. I said, no. Sweetie, you're not helpless. You just need help. There's a difference.
There we go.
Between helpless and needing help. And I just have to get her in that mindset that she is not.
Have you gotten the I'm a burden speech yet?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, just checking.
Oh, yeah. You didn't sign up for this. I'm so sorry.
Actually, I repeated the vows. I did sign up for this, right?
Yes, and I did say that. I said, you know that part that says for better or for worse?
In sickness and in health?
In sickness and in health? I did sign up for this. You know, I told her, you know, I'm just, it's good for me because it's getting me in practice for, you know, when she does get older. And I really have to do this. But,
or not to rain on the parade too much, I think you might want to use the first person plural there, Tracy. When we
get up.
Get older.
Oh yeah, yeah. That's what I trust me. I said, look, you're taking me because I you know I have empathy. I have distance empathy. Empathy from a distance. I can empathize with you and I can sympathize with you, but as long as it's not directly affecting me.
Yes.
That's terrible.
That's called being entirely, entirely, completely, undeniably human.
Yes. And so I told her, I said, remember, I'll plan on being a therapist someday. And because people, seriously, I had somebody ask me, I get this question, what do you do? And I said, I'm a cab driver. And I said, well, gee, I thought you were a therapist because I just get that from you. And I said, well, sooner than later, I will become a therapist. But for now, I'm just your local neighborhood cab driver. But it's being, you know, taking care of my wife, is like I said, it's given me a whole new outlook on how, you know, of how I look at people. I mean, like I said, she's not helpless, even though in her mind she is, but I had to order from Amazon a bench that you put part of it is in the tub and the other part is outside of the tub so she could just slide into the tub
mm-hmm.
and take, you know, seated shower. And because I told her, be happy, because when we first got the paperwork for her surgery, she wasn't going to be able to shower for 2 weeks because of the bandage that they were going to put on her. But her doctor put on a waterproof bandage, so she's able to shower. Even though it was a week later because we had to wait for that to come. It was supposed to come Saturday, and it didn't come until Sunday. But, you know, just having, I said, look at it. You're showering. I'm here helping you, but you're still showering. And she's like, you know, those things. But we're having the crying jags. But today she's in better spirits. Had a friend of ours come over to help to watch her, you know, like I said, sit with her until I got home because I had a doctor's appointment. Oh, so, speaking of health in my life. So, yes, I went to the doctor and he's like, okay, the swelling is not getting any better. I'm like, gee, no shit.
You think?
So now he wants me to go. I have to make an appointment with my doctor and my rheumatologist because he's afraid that I might have starting the rheumatoid arthritis.
Oh,
because
shit.
I shouldn't be having.
I mean, I just figured I'd save you the trouble and say it for you.
Well,
although that may have actually merited a well. Yeah.
No, that was no. Basically, it merited a. Are you fucking kidding me with this shit? That's basically what came up apart from that conversation. So he wants me to come back not next week, but the week after, because the ultrasound tech doesn't end today. And I'm going to have to get this thing called an edema pump. He's going to check and see if my insurance pays for it, which I hope they'll do a share of cost, because if not, it's going to cost me $200 for this damn thing. And ain't my plan.
It's a beautiful thing, Tracy, a beautiful thing.
You know, but then again, I keep saying, okay, well, see, here's the deal, kid. You're still blessed. You still have a, even with all my pain and my issues, I can still go to work. You know, I can still, you know, I can walk. I mean, it takes a little longer for me to walk than it used to, but I can still walk. You know, I could do, I'm still ahead of the game than most. And I have to remember that. You know, I'm part of a two-income family. You know, I have health insurance. And even if my insurance doesn't cover what I need for my leg, and it winds up costing me $200, I have the $200.
Yeah.
You know, so again, I have to look at those.
Just keep it a little perspective going, Tracy. Just a little perspective.
You know, I have, you know, and of course, I'm going to whine and bitch and moan because I'm human.
You know what? It makes us feel better when we do that.
I call it venting. Let's not call it bitching and moaning. Let's call it venting. I'm venting.
Yes.
That's how I choose to now describe it as venting, because and where else going to vent than with my homies, you know, on the horn? Oh, can we? Speaking of, well, we didn't speak of it, but I heard earlier that we haven't had no money coming in today at all. None.
Flavio announced that he's putting Andy Jackson in the mail, so that takes us down to $270.
Okay, well, let's do another $50 challenge.
Bless your heart. You don't have to do that, Tracy. I mean, you really don't.
No, I don't. I don't. See, I don't have to, but I want to.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Well, let's split the baby. Let's do a $25 challenge. How about that?
Okay. So that'll take us down to $220 to go if somebody will kick in 25 to meet Tracy's 25, or five at five, two at 10, one at five. You know, all the many and magnificent mathematical permutations.
See, because it's like, oh. So I was listening to Flavio talking about Brazil and that being his home, and it dawned on me, you know, because I'm watching the Olympics only for the gymnastics and stuff like that. So, you know how they have the little conversations with the people, the white people who don't really matter in my life? Well, there was this one English guy, and they were talking about the different cities of Brazil and, you know, Sao Paulo and all this. And I don't remember which city it was, but whatever city it was, it still has a lot of the colonial buildings. And he was just going on and on about colonial buildings and the days gone by. And I'm sitting there like, you racist.
It's like, hey, asshole, who built that? See, it's the same thing happened to me when I go down south, Tracy. You go down south, and I mean, it's to be had in... well, you know, Virginia, anywhere in the, and Alabama. I remember being at Selma for a march across the Edmund Pettus Bridge 4 years ago, and just sort of wandering back into the neighborhoods and looking at this magnificent, and of course it gets a historical marker and everything, Sturtevant Hall. Big, beautiful, antebellum. Antebellum mansion. And I'm reading the thing, and I'm going, where's the reference of the people who didn't have any damn freedom who had to build this son of a bitch for free?
Yeah. I mean, he was going on and on about, you know, colonial and the days gone by. And I'm sitting there, and I'm listening. And see, this is why it's a good thing that I didn't have my phone anywhere near me, because I would have went on a tweeting rant about really good. You know, of course, it was a white British guy, and he kept going on and on about.
You know, that just kind of dovetails into the white privilege hissy that was had by white wing America back when Michelle Obama spoke during the Democratic National Convention,
yes.
And she had the unmitigated temerity to mention that her children wake up every day in a house that was built by slaves. And, you know, I don't know if you caught it, but Falafel Boy, Bill O'Reilly,
they had food to eat or whatever.
That they were well fed.
Gee, golly, Willikers. Thanks the heat.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, red beans and rice, I mean, that's good eatings, right? Every day of your life, morning, noon, and night.
And you might have got lucky you got some fat.
Whoo!
Whoo!
But the thing is, that's not just the White House. That's the entirety of the southern infrastructure, the roads, the canals, the bridges, the homes, the lovely homes of Savannah, Georgia, Mercy.
Well, isn't it all of colonial? If you really want to go to it, isn't it all of colonial America?
Well, yeah, because there was plenty of slavery up north for a while too.
Yeah, people tend to forget about that.
Sadly, yes. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, please.
No, it's one of those things that, you know, when they think about the Mexican-American War and they talk about the Alamo and all this shit, and I'm like, motherfuckers, they weren't caring about this. Mexico said, we weren't going to give back slaves. Was it that war? Which one was it?
That's the Alamo. That's the Mexican War.
Right. We're not going to give you back the slaves because no.
Listen, white folks, just because you moved to Texas doesn't mean that you get to bring your filthy practices with you. Yes, it does. We're going to be a separate country now, we can have slaves.
So we can have slaves.
Mexican independence was fueled by the desire for slavery.
And people, I wish people would catch a clue. You know, can I have a clue for $1,000, Alex? You know,
but Tracy, we can't talk about that. We don't dare talk about it because it makes white people feel bad. And then they say dumbass things like, well, I ain't never owned no slaves.
You own no slaves.
I mean, goddamn, the entire, you know, white redneck America turns into Butterfly freaking McQueen. I don't know nothing about owning no slaves, Miss Scarlet. Jesus.
Oh, God.
I'm sorry I did that. I'm on the hook for that one.
No, that was fucking awesome. Because it's true. So speaking of, you know, white Christmas and all that, so last Saturday, because you know I told you we've been having issues at my church with stupid shit, and so we had the board of directors, we had a retreat. And our interim pastor, he had this idea of what we're doing. There's eight of us on the board. So each board member had a chance to meet with a different board member and tell them what they thought about or what they were feeling toward that person for 15 minutes. And that only person only had this, the only thing they could do was listen.
Oh, that had to be a blast.
Boy, it was awesome. It was awesome because I told you about how I was attacked about, you know, standing up for somebody, and I got attacked and I jumped in all three of the women's bathrooms, and they, you know, the white woman was like, you know, I've just been a really sheltered white woman, and I've never had the wrath of a black woman. I'm like, you need to get out more often. And it wasn't wrath. It was just me talking to you. And
wrath? Really? Wrath?
Wrath.
Damn, Tracy. Wrath. Wrath.
Yeah, wrath of the white.
But you understand all of that shit lives inside Trump-merica. And mm-hmm. Trump-merica is an almost identical overlay with the Confederacy with a few additions. You know, your Idahos and Montanas and Kansas stands.
Dakota.
And yeah.
I told her, I said, you need to get out. First of all, you need to get out more. And I said, the problem with you is the fact that you can live your entire life without ever having to really deal with a black person, especially a black person in authority. Okay? And unfortunately for most black people, myself included, especially my age and older, we were raised to show a certain deference to white people, and we take it to our detriment. We hold back because we don't want to be perceived as, you know, the overly emotional or angry black person or this or that or that. I said, but see, here's the problem. And here's the thing with me. I'm older and I'm tired. And so all those things for years that I have been just letting slide when people say stupid shit to me will no longer be the case. And so I am not going to apologize for a little hurt feeling. That's not going to happen. Because I have been raised, you know, I grew up around white people. I've lived my entire life. Because, again, I can't live my life without having to deal with white people. Where I go to school, when I'm trying to get a loan, whatever I have to do, I still have to deal with you people.
You
so
people.
I've learned.
Oh, you threw in a you people just for good measure?
Oh, yeah, just for good measure. I said, so I'm no longer taking that into consideration. And I said, because see, I've been taught how to talk to you and how to act around you. And you people have taken that for granted that that's how we're supposed to act. But we're not. And so you people need to grow up here and realize that we're not going anywhere. No matter, you know, how many people want to ship us off them to ship us in boats and all this sort of stuff, different countries and all this. I ain't going nowhere.
Mm-mm.
And as hard as...
I ain't leaving the valley.
No. I like where I live. And with all this fault, I love my country. So I ain't going nowhere. I'm cool here. So you need to get over yourself. And she's like, I know. And then they start... And then the crying started. I'm like, holy mother. Really? Like I said, I have no patience. Everybody was like, well, we just didn't know, because I'm just tired. but like you said, people get so butthurt over stuff, and that they're so used to being in a certain level of authority and power that they just can't handle it. That's why, you know, like the latest thing about Giuliani. Are you serious with that bullshit?
Well, he has since...
What did he say?
No, what? You got your hockey puck handy?
Yes.
Okay, let me dredge this up, because I mean this is some restaurant quality bullshit. might take me a second. Hold
I'm
up.
In the grocery store and I'm trying really hard not to laugh really loud.
Well, no, I'm proud of myself for what I did to you with the Butterfly McQueen reference. I mean, yeah.
That was actually, I have to say, that was awesome.
Here it is. Yes. I was using abbreviated language. As a longtime practitioner of the art of word knowing, I've been working on that one all afternoon, Tracy, and I got nothing. I mean, abbreviated language is like if you were speaking the way teenagers text or something, and we could hear the letter U instead of Y-O-U, or let's see, the Under those 8 years before Obama came along, we didn't have any successful radical Islamic terrorist attacks inside the United States. I am hell and be damned, Tracy, if I can find an abbreviation in there anywhere. So he said, when you're giving a speech, you only have 5 minutes. You can't give an encyclopedic explanation, he said, adding that he will, of course, make other comments that can be taken out of context or misinterpreted thanks to the limitations of public speaking. This is over at TPM Livewire.
Wait, what? The limitations of public speaking?
Right, because you can't. In 5 minutes, he couldn't say George W. Bush was president during the worst terrorist attack on American soil in American history.
Wait
a confounded minute, because I'm pretty. Let me say that again. George W. Bush was president during the worst terrorist attack on American soil in history. That, oddly enough, took me 7 seconds. Which is, you know, I talk kind of slow sometimes, Tracy. Not 5 minutes.
And don't forget, I was mayor.
Right. Yep. He was the mayor.
Just in case you forgot. Because when I heard that, I was like, nah. But see, because like I said, a lot of stuff, you know, because the news cycle runs pretty fast and you hear these blips as I'm walking in and out of the living room or whatever. So I'm like, yeah, I'm not hearing this. But I'm like, but this motherfucker just said. And here's the beautiful thing about having a TiVo. Because if the TiVo's on a channel, even if you're not record, you know, even if you haven't hit record, it's automatically records. Well, not automatically records. It keeps time with whatever's going for, like, you can, you know, rewind for like a up to like maybe an hour or whatever, whatever channel you're on. So I forget that. So I hit rewind and I'm looking and I said, no, this, wait, this, seriously?
Seriously?
You changed
the pitch and timbre of your voice for that, Tracy. I mean, yes.
I did it seriously because I'm just like, this is that when, you know, being me and being, you know, pretty, I mean, I'm not like, you know, news ninja and all that, you know, there's a lot of stuff that I missed and I thank God for you and, you know, and all that, and happy, you know, and all this, and then I hear this, and I'm like, what, Carol? When I hear stuff like that, I just hope and pray that Carol Baker and you aren't like listening live at the same time, because then you guys' heads start to explode.
Pow. And all of this statement about using abbreviated language came in an interview with the New York Post, who rang him up real quick and said, really, Rudy, what the? And he said, I didn't forget 9/11. I hardly would. I almost died in it.
Wait. Pump the fucking brakes.
Shut the front door.
Was he anywhere near the Twin Towers?
Nowhere near.
Okay. So you're doubling down.
Yeah, because, we were never under the impression, Tracy, that he had forgotten 9/11. It's just that he blamed Barack Obama for it.
It's like, was Barack, okay, question.
Because that's what he said.
That was September 2001, yes? September 11, 2001.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm,
all the questions. Was Barack Obama even a senator yet?
He was a member of the Illinois legislature. He was a senator in Illinois, I do believe.
So he was a member of the Illinois state legislature.
Yeah, in Springfield.
He was not
in D.C. He was in Springfield.
So So he wasn't even in Congress. He wasn't even the junior senator.
No, from Illinois. He was just sitting there in Springfield using his Kenyan Muslim usurper powers.
So he wasn't even in the Washington, D.C.
No.
Oh, my God.
He was 1,000 miles from Washington, D.C.
See, this is those are those moments when you just really start. That's when you have to pass the hockey puck, because you're saying to yourself,
"Oh no, I chomped right through mine."
Bob. It chills me to my very core because it's this. People are so fucking delusional.
Well, you know where I go with this crazy shit, Tracy. Okay, so he said it. But the thing is, I'm not nearly as worried about him saying it because I know he's a slimy little Machiavellian right-wing piece of shit, okay? But when he said it, there were millions of Emrys and Marvelines sitting in their Barca loungers all over Merca, going, damn right.
Sorry? Thanks, Obama.
If it wasn't for that Obama and Killery Hitlery, them buildings would probably be still a-standing.
Was Hillary even a senator yet?
Didn't she run in 2000? Yeah.
Yeah. So she had been elected senator.
I don't know for sure, but.
Well, I don't know for sure because Bill just got out of office in 2000. Wait, when did Bill get out of office? Wait, no, he got out of office in 1990.
He left office on January 20th, 2001.
So no. She was still first lady.
She wasn't then. Let's see.
She wasn't still first lady, but she would have been. Was she running for senator in 2000? But she wouldn't have been.
She ran in 2000. She represented New York from 2001 to 2009. Yeah. So.
Okay. I know. Look, we're doing the math. Like, wait, what?
Right, but see, she used her special Hitlery Benghazi powers to bring the buildings down.
Oh, right. And it wasn't even, and Benghazi hadn't even, was not even a gleam in Hillary's eye. My God. Again, the thing, you know, I try so hard not to be biased and this and that and just try to take people and their tomfoolery and shenanigans and skullduggery. But see, the problem is, you know, not that I'm going to ignore it, because we can't ignore it, but the thing is, it's affecting my life and my son's life and one day maybe my future grandkids' lives and my nieces. Because, again, seriously, and you, like you said, if it was enough of us in this country, when people like Giuliani or Trump said bullshit that they say, you know, like Trump telling the Second Amendment people to do this, and Giuliani saying, you know, that it's the Twin Towers, Obama's prop, you know, it's his fault. If there's not enough of us to defuse the situation, go ahead.
No. That's perfectly expressed, and it's the fact that it does affect our lives, and all of these stupid little stories that I have from one place or another, you know, these are all stories of people's lives being affected. I mean, the thing I started out with, the kid who was going to the restroom at the Old Faithful Lodge at Yellowstone National Park, and he just mommy, daddy, I'm going to the restroom. Okay, son. He's 8 years old, and while he's in there, the gun just went off. Now, he didn't get hurt, he didn't get hit, but really at Yellowstone? Because we can carry guns, because freedom.
What? And you know I was screaming when I was listening to that, because I'm like, wait, so, okay, we can bring the guns in the park, but it's illegal to shoot the gun. So what's the fucking point to bring the gun into the park?
Right, okay, so let me add another. So you know about the 1968 Mexico City Olympics, right?
Oh, yes. I kind of, you know, over the years, I remember hearing about something. What happened? Didn't they take people hostage, or
well,
was that in Israel?
Tommy Smith and John Carlos were first and third in the 200-meter race. And it was 1968.
The Black Power.
And so they did the Black Power salute. And Avery Brundage, who was a big fan of the little guy with the Charlie Chaplin mustache, who had no problem whatsoever with the Nazi salute in 1936 because he said it was a national expression, not an expression of, you know, personal politics being injected into the sacredness of the games. So they had a fit. White Mirka had a plum fit.
They lost their collective shit.
On Smith and Carlos. So flash forward 48 years, and Gabby Douglas. Who got gold in the London Olympics and had a tough time of it in Rio, but she won. She won gold in the team in the team event. But ooh, you know what she didn't do?
She didn't salute.
She didn't put her hand over her heart during the playing of the national anthem. Ooh, the disgrace! Now you put your hand over your heart for the Pledge of Allegiance. There's no protocol whatsoever that says you do that with the national anthem.
You stand at attention.
And you face the flag. But the other four gymnasts are standing there with their hands over their hearts, and she's not. And right-wing America had a baby. Right-wing America had kittens with crocheted tails. How dare she not put her hand over her heart for the national anthem of her country that gived her everything.
Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, back at the fort.
Nobody thinks that, and she hasn't said that it was deliberate, but sometimes the goddess of irony just takes care of things. It just so happens she did not put her hand over her heart on the anniversary date of the day that the police in Ferguson, Missouri, gunned down Michael Brown and left his body in the street in the August heat like a rabid dog they'd just killed. Sometimes the goddess of irony takes care of these things.
Right. And then did you also see the picture of Donald Trump at one of the crazy things that they're calling their...
Yeah, the pageants. Yeah, this was a CNN pageant, where he's just standing there with his hands hanging down like the great big orange pile of steaming pile of shit that he is. And next to him is Ted Cruz with his hand in his jacket like he thinks he's fucking Napoleon.
Well, isn't he?
I thought he was Napnadian.
I thought he was just a fucking idiot, but, you know. That's just
meanwhile, Michael Phelps was giggling during the national anthem. White wing America didn't find that nearly as upsetting. But you know, in 2016, Tracy, not putting your hand over your heart at a time when it's not mandatory is pretty much the same damn thing as John Carlos and Tommy Smith raising their fist up in the Black Power salute, which they had a right to damned well do.
Didn't they take their medals?
Oh, they shit all over them.
And again, the hypocrisy. It's like, you know, I don't like when I see the Pledge of Allegiance. I don't even say the Pledge. I say, when they should, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for some.
Well, see, it gets a little interesting for me anytime I'm in a room where it's said, because I'll do the I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, and I go silent for the under God part, because that was only added at the behest of the Knights of Columbus during the anti-communism furor of the 1950s. Under God was not in the pledge when it was written by a Baptist socialist minister from Massachusetts in the late 19th century.
Nope, it was not. And see, this is selective memory.
Well, or I don't know. Let's call that memory privilege.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, isn't that nice? Memory privilege.
I like that. I just used one of my friends gave me a wonderful gift card. I totally forgot to a $100 gift card, Visa gift card. And I'm like, ooh, I got to use that. You know how you forget that some people give you gift cards and you just walk around. And then you remember when you're slightly broke.
Yeah, and you go, oh, but, I got that.
And I spent my groceries for $117, and now it's only cost me $17, so I'm happy. But no, what did you call it? Memory privilege?
Yeah.
Is that what you just call it?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to, you know what?
There's some things that privilege attaches to, and you don't have to remember them.
Right. Oh, my God, what you just said is fucking genius. Holy shit. it's the best thing I've heard since Skip was a pup. I'm telling you. I mean, but that's just awesome, because you said it perfectly. Because it's Jan asked me, I've told the story a million times. When we went to South Carolina in Charleston, yes. We went to the slave market museum. And she comes out and she's like, in all earnestness, there was no malicious. She wasn't being malicious or anything like that. She was just being a white woman out of the country. Well, was slavery really that bad? And my response was, well, does anybody ever ask you, was the Holocaust really that bad? You know?
Yeah.
Because I told you that her grandparents and her great grandparents were some of the first Jewish settlers from the old country. Her uncle, actually, I believe she told me, was the first state senator from Alaska. They came from Bering Strait, the whole nine yards to Alaska. As a matter of fact, she used to spend all her summers when she was a kid in Alaska. And back then, they didn't even have a synagogue where they didn't have a synagogue there until they had to do their services on the Air Force Base. So they would, for fear of reprisal, and come to find out, they didn't finally have a synagogue, because when her mom died, speaking of 9/11, her mom died within a week or so after 9/11. And so they were, she was in L.A., and they had to, she wanted to be buried in Alaska, because that's where she grew up. And they had a hell of a time getting her body to Alaska because of all the, restrictions and stuff like that. But so they didn't have an actual synagogue there until 2001. And how long had Alaska been a state?
Exactly. Hey, a little follow up from our buddy David Angry down in different Angry down in
another Angry?
Yeah, up over. Yeah, he's the Angry. No, wait. I may be right. Wait, anyway, David. Up over down under in Australia. He says. Please, whenever mentioning Mexico City in 1968, don't ever forget Peter Norman. And I didn't, but I didn't mention him, because this is real. He was an Australian athlete who came in second in that race. He wore a human rights badge in that photo and got himself blacklisted after that and suffered a whole pile of crap back here in Australia as well. He didn't get himself selected for the next games on purpose, but nobody knows his story. Both Tommy Smith and John Carlos made him a friend for life, and they carried his casket at his funeral in 2006. That's friendship and respect. Yeah? Yeah. Yeah, David is the David's the angry architect. But that's the absolute truth. He took unmitigated hell for wearing that human rights badge and standing in solidarity with Tommy Smith and John Carlos.
And see, again, you got to go. But why? You know why is?
Well, but that's an evening of Australian history that I'll leave to people like Robert and David. Who can probably tell you in greater detail than you would ever want to know about the degree of racism that has obtained and still rears its ugly head to this day in Australia. I mean, you can start with the Australia for Australians policy. You can start even further back than that. You can start with what was done to the Indigenous peoples of Australia, which is a horror on a par with anything that was done to any Indigenous people in the Americas, if not worse.
It's not worse.
Let's put it this way. They were hunted, Tracy.
Yeah.
For sport, if I recall what little I know of Australian history correctly.
I was watching. I didn't really get a chance to watch it but there was a series on Sundance Channel called Clever Man. And I can remember, from the looks of the people that were in the show and the accent from what I could catch, I believe that it was filmed in Australia, and it was about Aboriginals in Australia who had mystic and magic and spirit powers, like, you know, telekinetic stuff, like, you know, telekinesis and I think like mind control. And of course, you know, the white people had to, you know, rounding them up and putting them in, you know, in camps and stuff like that. Kind of like, what was that, that other Australian movie, District 13?
I think that was actually a South African film, but I get the
idea. That was South African. But this one is, the heroes in the movie and the TV show they look Aboriginal. And like I said, I just did not get a chance to watch it, but I'm pretty sure I can get it on demand. Maybe our Australian friends can help me out with that. But it looked like a really interesting series. When you make people less than nothing.
Well, here, let me give you a quick update from Jen in Australia. The Indigenous people of Australia were hunted, and they were still being hung up until 1969.
Hmm.
Yeah. Hey, Tracy, we got to get out of here. I'm thrilled to tell you that your challenge got met.
Yay!
And both Robert and David in South Carolina jumped in on that. So let's see. Let me do some quick math here. We got $190 to go in fundraising for this evening. So we cracked last night's deficit. And hopefully, prayer meeting Wednesday, when the plate passes, we'll be able to knock down 390.
Yay!
So thank you for getting that ball rolling, Tracy.
Not a problem. You know, Horn family, every little bit helps. I started off, look what happened, $25, then we cut the shit down. So let's keep doing that, all right?
All right. You be good, Tracy. tell Jan she's not a burden, and she'll be okay soon.
Yes, she will. Love you guys. Talk soon.
All right. Bye now. Tracy, the lady cab driver, as we head out the door this evening. Thanks. Thanks very kindly, Flavio and Robert and David, and to Tracy for making the challenge. Yeah, tomorrow's fundraising goal, when the plate passes, or between now and then, $390. And thanks to everyone for making all of this happen and making this little community a reality. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.